It confuses the new controllers when all the blips look the same. You're on Squawk 1200 with Wireless Mike.
And welcome to EAA Radio. It's 1234. Beautiful, 79 degrees out. And we've got Paul with us.
Hi, Mike.
Say hi. Thank you. And Afterburner Al. And we're going to change format just a little bit for the next segment here. And we are all airline pilots of some stripe or not another. And there's been a lot of changes. And so we thought we'd talk a little bit about the changes in what it takes to get an ATP. Paul, you're probably the most informed on this stuff. So what can you tell us?
So let me just say, too, that this is a good time to be in aviation. There's a lot of movement in the industry right now, and by movement I mean that the mainline carriers and the major airlines have resumed some hiring after a period of time when there were not a lot of hires, and the place where most of the mainline airlines are getting their pilots are from the regional airlines. And I'm involved with training at a regional airline, and we have some of our pilots now that are leaving. And that causes us to want to hire additional pilots now to fill those places that are taken through just normal attrition. So for a person who's interested in coming into aviation and getting a career in the airlines, it is a good time because there's some growth that we haven't seen in quite some time, and our best forecasts are is that this will continue.
Now, with the, I believe there's new regulations with actually what it takes to get your ATP. It used to be, sure, I could, when I got my ATP, I went out in a Cessna 310 and I did a check ride and that was my ATP.
That's right. So last year there was a major change in regulation. There was a new law put into effect that was called Public Law 111-216, which was a congressional law that mandated everybody coming to a Part 121 operator must have a ATP or have ATP minimums in order to get hired. So this has been a major change in the industry. So now all of the regional carriers are looking for people who have ATP minimums. They did build into the law several mechanisms for meeting the requirement. At the very basic level, you have to have 1,500 hours plus some other requirements in order to meet the minimums for an ATP. However, if you're a graduate of an approved FAA-approved four-year program from a university or a college such as University of North Dakota or Embry-Riddle and some other fine institutions, then you can come in to the airlines with what's called a restricted ATP, which means you have to have 1,000 hours. Alternatively, there's a mechanism for getting an associate degree and having a requirement for 1,250 hours. So these have been some of the basic changes that the airlines have been coping with over the past couple of years. Going forward, though, the day after tomorrow starts another change to the rules and regulations. And again, this has been a spinoff of the Public Law 111-216, and that is, what does it take to actually take your ATP knowledge test? Because Mike, as you said, when you did your ATP check ride, you probably studied a study guide, you got through the questions, you went to a testing center and you took your knowledge test, and that was it.
Yeah, good old climb.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, we all did that or yeah, or similar variation, mm-hmm, of that, and it was fairly standard. Well, starting on August the 1st of this year, there is a new rule that says in order to take an ATP knowledge test, you have to complete an approved certified training program course, or they call it a CTP course. This is actually quite a change, and it's quite a burden to the industry because it requires 30 hours of ground school as well as 10 hours of simulator time in a level D simulator.
So which is quite a high level.
It's the same level of simulator that we use to train our pilots.
And it's not cheap.
And it's not cheap. So my colleagues at other regional airlines, we gather frequently to talk about, how we're coping with some of the regulatory impact. And it looks like what will happen is that most airlines will develop their own certified training program and make that a curriculum that is offered to people who want to come in and become an airline pilot, and this will be a mechanism for them to get their ATP knowledge test. So there is some burden on the providers of this, and the airlines are the ones that will probably provide it. There are some other third-party providers that will likely put together a course, such as the simulator companies, such as CAE or Flight Safety, and some other simulator companies will probably offer a course. But from a recruiting tool, we absolutely feel that we have to offer this ourselves to make make our offer kind of a one-stop shop for pilots who want to enter the airlines.
What does this do? Already the pipeline has been kind of in flux even before this rule is coming into effect in
That's
about
right.
36 hours. What does this do now to the pipeline? How do you see it maybe shaking out as far as the pilot pipeline goes?
Well, it certainly puts a lot of pressure on the pipeline. I mean, whether you believe there's a pilot shortage or not is a topic that we could talk about for hours and hours. Our sense is that there is a growing pilot shortage, and we see it continuing. This requirement now to offer 30 additional hours of ground school plus 10 hours in a level D sim, it just pressures the system a little bit more. The airlines will respond to this, I'm sure, and create their own curriculum and just make sure that, you know, we're providing everything that a pilot would want to come into the airline.
And that's really interesting, because now let's take it all the way back, because you've managed a flight school at a local airport, and so someone that comes out there and says, you know what, I got dreams of being a professional pilot, and looks at the pipeline from that perspective, because that usually there was always a direct line from local flight school to airlines before that. Now it's kind of different. Seems like kind of different.
There's a gap, Al. The reason there's a gap now is because of the 1,500 hours, or even at 1,000. I mean, if you graduate from a approved four-year program such as UND or Embry or Western Michigan or Purdue or any of these aviation programs, you're going to graduate with about 220 or 230 hours, and that's after 4 years of degree program and flight training. So that's a gap between, you know, from there to the 1,000 hours. So what do? You'll have to instruct or find some other aviation, you know, job to build your flight time. So it puts pressure on the system. We are concerned. Of course, we're also concerned about how these people will get financing for this. I mean, this is a big part of the puzzle as well. Right now, what we look at is somebody will go through perhaps a four-year program or maybe an associate program. They'll get, you know, the hours out of that when they graduate. They'll have to spend some time doing some other aviation activities such as flight instructing at that school or someplace else or some other aviation job. And then once they get their time, they'll be interviewed by possibly a regional airline. They'll get a class date. But the first thing they'll have to do if they do not have their ATP written is they'll have to go through this approved CTP class.
See, now, the other interesting thing is when I was coming up through the ranks a few years ago, you know, I had 3,000 hours before I could actually get an interview at an airline. So it's changed quite a bit.
The times are down. Since I've been at the airline, I've seen us hire people with an average or a class with an average class of 5,000 hours all the way down to an average class of 500 hours. Right now, obviously, our average class size is in the 1,500 to 2,000 because it's been driven by regulation.
Yeah, it can't be below 1,500.
Not anymore, really, except for the entry ATP. Through the restricted ATP program.
Now, let's talk about the things that haven't changed qualification-wise. And I'm not just talking about the numbers, but skill sets. What hasn't changed?
So I think that this new rule, it certainly puts some parameters on numbers, but we're looking for the right experience matched up with those numbers. It's one thing to build time, you know, flying around in your local airport in a traffic pattern. It's another to have an extensive amount of instrument skills, cross-country experience, PIC time. So we don't see the regulation changing. We think it's something that the airlines will have to just, you know, apply some change management to and just deal with. But we want to make sure that we capture the right experience with that flight time so that we can make sure people are successful in training. I mean, that's our mission. We want people to be successful when they come to us.
So what is the thing that people are missing the most when they show up for? What one thing should people who want a career in the airlines study that you're seeing deficiencies in right now?
From a flight experience standpoint, we emphasize quality instrument time, cross-country time, PIC time. The academics we'll take care of because we'll teach them what they need to know about the operation and about the airplane. I think the thing that is hard for a new pilot coming into an airline is that they may not appreciate the pace at which we do. I mean, when I got my private pilot's license, it took me 11 months because I did it on my time. When you come into an airline environment, you're going to do it on the airline's time, and it's compressed. So my sense is that's the most difficult thing, is people need to understand the pace at which the training and learning occurs.
And it's quick.
It is.
Unfortunately, we're running a little bit short on time for this segment, so we are going to have to continue the discussion somewhere else.
Around the campfires, across the nation.
Yes.
As we solve this issue.
I'm sure it will be solved at some time.
So you've been listening to EAA Radio.